side. Honor them crazy murderers, we never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see not joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a toy, can't just see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
Here we go, folks. It is Wednesday, November the, 18th, something like that, 2020, and you are listening to today's surprise episode of The Ugly Truth broadcast. Yes, folks, believe it or not, only 6 days later, and here we are again getting together to talk about some very important things. Let's see, folks, I want to start off by thanking everybody who contacted me after the program and sent along some extremely kind words about the quality of it. I was rather down on it. I felt that I was rusty, and I've had this horrible infection in my sinuses, folks. I'm sorry to have to divulge something as unpleasant as that, but it was a very noisy recording with me sniffing and things like that, and I apologize for that. I always, I was in mass the other day with my wife, and I sat in the back because now I am just this sniff monster all the time. Can't help it. It's either that or you know have a mess come running down my face. And I don't know, I guess after about, 5 minutes or so of me sniffing, she just turned around and gave me this look about what a spectacle I was making of myself with my nose issues. So anyway, I apologize for that. I don't think that today is going to be any better in that regard. But that's just the way it is. And on top of that, folks, I'm also getting old, okay? And old men, they just make a lot of noise, okay? They're always clearing their throats. They're always coughing and hacking. It's just an indicator that, the angel of death is just getting closer and closer. And so there we go, clearing my throat. That's just, unfortunately, the way that it is. So anyway, got some very nice emails from people saying that the program, that I didn't sound rusty at all, that I sounded just like my old self from years ago. Well, I still feel rather rusty, folks, and it's going to be that way for a while, as long as we are permitted to continue doing this. Rest assured that that the powers that be, who are constantly lecturing everybody on the importance of freedom of speech, especially when it's something that is meant to drag the culture down into the gutter, to exalt some form of perversion or whatever, that's the only time that freedom of speech really matters, folks, is when these people, and yeah, folks, we'll be talking about those people in this program and in subsequent programs, when these people, for them, as far as free speech goes, it only counts when it works in their favor and when it advances their agenda of empowerment, enrichment, and basically just continuing the process that began thousands and thousands of years ago, folks. But especially that particular event that took place that the West has always remembered as Good Friday, even though there's nothing good about it, folks. There's only one group of people who would characterize that as a good thing. And that's who we'll be talking about on this program, folks, as I have done in years past. I promise you that you're not going to be treated to any kind of programs where we're going to be discussing the health benefits of drinking your own urine like some of the other programs out there in the quote-unquote movement discuss. No, folks, we are going to be talking about this thing known as Judaism. Now, I had some folks contact me after last weekend's program, and they were asking me about the intro, and they were asking, well, who is that guy talking about, you know, Judaism? And it's a guy named Douglas, I think it's Douglas Rushkoff or Ruskoff, something like that. And, you know, by the grace of God, folks, we were able to find that audio recording of him saying this. It's actually a video on YouTube, and he's basically just laying it out. He's saying, you know, we are a corrosive force. You know, those of us who follow this very peculiar cult religion, cult theology known as Judaism. And he says, we don't have any regard for these other religions and their gods and their morality and things like that. And this is what Judaism teaches us. And he says, you know, we are a corrosive force in that we're tearing down everything that we don't believe by virtue of our Judaism to be true. And he's absolutely correct, folks. The problem is that for far too long, people have taken an incomplete view, and therefore what I would characterize as a deficient understanding of what Judaism is. And then, of course, you have people who, they just don't want to touch that subject at all. You can talk about anything, folks. You can talk about Islam, and you can go from A to Z discussing all the various things involved in Islam. Whether they're real or not, you know, you have a whole industry out there of people who have made lying about Islam something of a career for themselves. And you can have people out there who will, you know, microanalyze Christianity in all of its different forms, Protestantism, Catholicism, Orthodox, whatever. But the one thing that we are not allowed to do, folks, we are not allowed to peer into the one religion, the one mindset that is so much at the center of so much upheaval in the world today. I haven't listened to Rush Limbaugh or to conservative talk radio for, 15 years, folks, ever since I was on Limbaugh's show as a caller. And he was on the program, he was taking to task Pat Buchanan for an article that Pat Buchanan had written, and I believe it was entitled "Whose War?" And Buchanan was giving a history lesson to those who were not aware of it, of what the neoconservatives were, how they got their start, the energy that animates them, and the agenda that they are working for. And Buchanan's article was, factually speaking, 100% correct. And of course, at this time, folks, you know, this was the 2D war in Iraq, part two. And so, you know, Limbaugh, being a devoted Republican and a devoted conservative, he saw Buchanan's article as, you know, something that was going to divide and conquer at a time when what the Republican president at that time, the little monkey in the White House, George W. Bush, what he, you know, needed in order to prosecute this war of aggression, which was national unity. So I actually had made it onto his program, and I said, and Limbaugh's stance on this was, we shouldn't be looking into the we shouldn't be looking at the Jewish roots of the neoconservative movement. That's just, you know, masked anti-Semitism. So I made it on, and I said, what if instead of a bunch of Jews who were loyal to Israel, who practiced their Judaism, what if it was a bunch of Muslims that Bush had appointed? Yes, I know, folks, this is stretching the what if out into, you know, realms of impossibility. But let's just say, for the sake of this argument here, that Bush had appointed a bunch of Muslims to his to the highest councils in his White House, and they were all advising him on foreign policy matters that he should be taking more of a balanced approach to Israel. Or even imagine if you know, the news had gotten out about these five Israeli intelligence officers who had been arrested in New Jersey on the morning of 9/11, cheering and clapping as the towers were coming down and the planes were crashing into the buildings. You know, what if they were advising that that Bush start a war with Israel? Then we would be taking all sorts of very careful looks and study of these people who were advising the president. Anyway, Limbaugh sidestepped the entire thing. He said, you know, that this is too much of a hypothetical and all the rest of that. And then I stopped listening to him. Well, about a year ago, I decided to check in and to see what he was saying with regards to Donald J. Trump. And, you know, I knew that Limbaugh and Trump had been friends for a long time. So I figured that I was going to get, you know, just the predictable dose of support for the president. But I was astounded, folks. I was, and I still am to this day, because I do listen to Rush Limbaugh, because I think that his analysis within his particular realm is good. Okay. And he was talking about the Never Trumpers. He was talking about, this was a year ago, about the neocons, about all of this, and he was even talking about the deep state. And folks, I can remember 30 years ago, or whatever, when Bill Clinton was in office, listening to Limbaugh and how he would ridicule people who advanced or believed in the conspiracy theory that there was this thing known as a deep state, meaning that there were people who remained hidden behind shadows, and they got together in dark, smoke-filled offices, and they plotted out the bigger events that affected the world, affected the country, and whatever. And here he is on his program talking about the deep state. Anyway, I have been listening to him ever since, and have been pleasantly surprised. I'm never going to forgive him for selling the clash of civilizations, meaning the invasion and the destruction of Iraq that then opened up the door towards the Arab Spring, which led to the destruction of Libya and Syria and all of the rest of that. I'm never going to forgive him for that. But, you know, I think that given the fact that he is dying of terminal cancer, that, you know, this is his penance, you know, that he can go ahead and he can allow the discussion, the ceiling on the discussion, to go a little bit higher. And to, you know, because it's undeniable now, folks. It's undeniable. I understand from a strategic point of view why people such as Limbaugh, who I'm sure has had, you know, some kind of connection with the U.S. intelligence community for a long time. There's no way that somebody who has an audience like he does, that he's not going to be approached by some branch of U.S. intelligence just because he, you know, he has such a large listening audience. Anyway, folks, you know, the one thing that he's never going to discuss, okay, and really the one thing that virtually nobody is going to discuss, nobody is going to put that one piece of the puzzle into it involving Judaism, involving Jewish power. They're not going to put that one piece into the puzzle that completes the picture and brings everything together. And, you know, we do have people out there who will talk about Jewish power, but they do it in such a stupid way that any and all discussion on this vitally important topic gets discredited and literally dragged through the sewer, folks, when you have people posting programs talking about the health benefits of drinking your own urine. Or take your pick. Take your pick. You know, our good friend Stash, he appeared on the program, you know, before everything was blown up by the anti-free speech people operating out of what I refer to as Judea Incorporated. He's been sending me some stories about, you know, some of our old friends, our old hangouts in the quote-unquote 9/11 truth movement, and just how stupid they all are. I mean, these same people, some of them for the last 4 years, have been talking about how, you know, the organized Jewish interests, they loved Trump, that they got Trump elected, that they never opposed his presidency, that they've done nothing but grease the skids for him before and after election, including the last 4 years of his presidency. And now these same people, these very same people, folks, it's amazing. It's an amazing spectacle to witness and to you know, let sink in. These very same people now are screaming that the Jews are out to get rid of Trump. The same people who said 4 years ago, when individuals such as yours truly was saying, no, the Jews don't want Trump in office. All you have to do is read what they're writing and listen to what they're saying. Okay, so there are the Sheldon Adelsons and some of these other people, okay? But in general, as a group, we cannot allow one or two of them to negate what is a well earned generalization that operates up in the 90s, the 90 percentile. Okay. And I have my own theory about Sheldon Adelson, by the way, folks, which we'll talk about at some point on the program. I don't know about today, but I have my own theories as to why Adelson has been sort of in Trump's camp. You know, I'll just tell you now, folks, I don't think that he's been necessarily a willing participant in this. I think that Trump and his people twisted Adelson's arm and threatened him with, you know, he was under federal criminal investigation because of his being accused of bribing the government of Macau, which is, you know, in the Far East. And the U.S. citizen is not allowed to do that. They're not allowed to bribe government officials. And Adelson was under investigation for doing that. And then suddenly that investigation came to an end. In return for Adelson paying, I don't remember what the fine was. It was in the millions, but it went away within the first year of Trump's presidency. And I think that the reason for this is that Trump needs Adelson in his camp. He needs his money, and he needs to divide. He needs to divide the organized Jewish community, especially the pro-Israel community. And unfortunately, folks, there just aren't that many people who are going to discuss this particular topic in a competent way. Like I said, these very same people who, you know, for the last 4 years have been saying that Trump is owned by the Jews and the Jews just love him, and, you know, and putting aside all of the stuff that has been part of the daily tsunami, the daily media tsunami against Trump. And folks, we can just abandon the notion that that it's anything except very powerful, organized, pro-Israel Jewish interests that own the media in America. And anybody who tries to tell you otherwise is, borrowing a phrase used by our good friend Mike Piper, either a fool or a liar. Okay? Those stories wouldn't be getting out there in the fashion that they are unless it met with the approval of those who sign the checks. The Greenbergs and the Steinbergs and, you know, that particular neighborhood, that particular pedigree of people. So that's what we will be covering on this program, folks, for as long as we are permitted to air our views. I have no doubt about the fact that they will do what they did already in shutting us down, and then we'll have to find a new venue. And on that note, I did get quite a few emails from people who said that they wanted to contribute to the costs associated with doing this program. And I do have a way of doing that. Anybody who is interested, send me an email at The Ugly Truth Radio Program, it's all one word, The Ugly Truth Radio Program, at gmail.com, and I will send you the link where you can, you know, plug in your information. And by the way, folks, anybody out there who is making that offer, especially in these very difficult times that we are in right now. I appreciate it very much. I know that it's not an easy thing to do because literally everything is falling apart. And it is falling apart by design. And that's one of the things that I want to cover on today's program. So I've gotten a few emails from people saying, you know, what do you think is going to happen? And I said, well, I think that in a political and in a social way, it's 9/11 all over again. And everybody will remember on 9/11, you know, the planes hit the towers and, you know, we were all just transfixed on our televisions watching as these towers were burning and the black smoke going up into the air and all the rest of that. And then, I can't remember what it was, an hour later, something like that, all of a sudden the first tower just begins to crumble and it falls into its own footprint. Okay, and then it wasn't too much longer after that that the second one did. Well, folks, that is exactly, my theory is that is exactly what is happening right now. We are looking at a 9/11 type political disaster. In this case, the stealing of this election. And they intend to destroy the country. I don't think that the plan is necessarily to get Biden into office and then to put everything back on track to where it was before Donald J. Trump changed his address to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I think that they plan to pull the entire country down, folks. Just like 9/11. I mean, if the planes had just crashed into the buildings and nothing more dramatic or traumatic had happened besides that, and the buildings had just sat there and burned for a while, and then, you know, it kind of went out, then, you know, they wouldn't have achieved, it wouldn't have achieved maximum effect. The buildings had to come down in order to generate the kinds of emotional energy that they, meaning Israel and the organized Jewish interests who pulled off that act of war against the United States, without the towers crumbling down in the very dramatic and traumatic way that they did, they wouldn't have been able to achieve that catharsis, I guess is the word that we would use, that was necessary in order to get this war started. And, you know, the thing is that people don't understand is that the wars are not done yet. And that this is the reason why they are out to destroy the person and the presidency of Donald J. Trump, because he made clear when he was just candidate Trump that he was going to extricate the United States from these endless wars. Okay. You know, when he said, you know, we're getting out and that we're not going to get involved in any more of these wars, that was it. At that moment, politically speaking, he had painted a target on himself, and the organized Jewish interests were going to do everything they could to bring him down. So as far as where all of this is going today, ladies and gentlemen, what I believe is that they, you know, let's face it, we've been dealing with drama for the last 4 years, and especially in the last 10 months, ever since this deliberately cooked up virus was released. And then, of course, you know, all of the lockdowns, the economic problems, the riots and everything else. These were just the opening acts of, you know, for what they intend to be the grand finale. And my personal theory at this point is that they're going to, you know, Trump, I think, is going to prevail. I think that he is going to win the election. I mean, at the very least, folks, and I put this on the website earlier this week, or it was last week sometime, he has got Joe Biden dead to rights. Joe Biden is on tape bragging about his own role in what was a felonious government corruption when he was bragging at the Council on Foreign Relations, sitting right next to Richard Haass, ladies and gentlemen. You should know who Richard Haass is. He was one of the big, one of those big Jews, one of those big mockers who was there during the administration of George H.W. Bush during the first round of wars with Iraq. And then he was there with the little monkey in the White House, George W. Bush. He's a big pro-Israel, very powerful individual, and Biden is sitting there, sitting next to him, talking to a group of journalists and other people, and bragging about how he used his office at that time as vice president to quash a criminal investigation that involved his son in the Ukraine. And that if they didn't quash the investigation, that he was going to see to it that they didn't get the $1 billion that had been allotted to them by the U.S. government. Trump has got Biden dead to rights. He could have Biden hauled out of his nursing home, or wherever it is he's hiding out these days, hauled out in handcuffs and charged. I mean, the guy's right there. He is admitting to felonious criminal activity as an employee of the U.S. government. So Trump has that Trump card up his sleeve that he could utilize at any moment. And rest assured, folks, he will do that if that's what it takes. He understands, and this is not an ego thing for Trump. He and the people behind him, and this is something that I think that people have to understand, Trump is just the tip of the spear. Okay, he represents a much larger group of very powerful individuals, people in the military, in the intelligence community, even on Wall Street, folks, and in banking, who understand that this ship of state that has been hijacked by these air pirates, that they intend to fly this plane straight into the ground and to kill everybody on board. And so Trump and his people have managed to get into the cockpit and into the captain's seat, and they're trying to pull this plane out of this nosedive. And we've got these pirates who are, you know, doing everything they can to get the door open to the cockpit so that they can get back in there and finish the job. And this is something that you know, we talked about this quite a bit years ago when the program was still up and running. Judea has been nursing a grudge for 2,000 years against the Roman Empire that destroyed that country and scattered the Jews to the four corners of what was at that time the Roman Empire and subjected them to, you know, billions and billions of years of anti-Semitism and billions of Jews who've been persecuted and killed and expelled and blah, blah, blah. You look at all of their religious festivals, most of them, and it's always a celebration of how they avenge themselves against some powerful country, some powerful empire that did them wrong and made them suffer. You know, Passover, they celebrate the destruction of Egypt and how the mean old Egyptians, you know, they made the Jews, the Israelites, the Hebrews, whatever word you want to use to describe them, made them build the pyramids and scrub the public toilets and, you know, do manicures for the royal family or whatever. And then you have Hanukkah, or as our good friend Mike Piper used to disparagingly refer to it, Hanukkah. And, you know, this is the celebration of the destruction of the Greeks who were in the Middle East. And you know, the celebration of the destruction of Greek culture. Okay. And then we have Purim, of course, you know, the celebration of the destruction of Persia, how they were mean to the poor, you know, innocent little pure as the wind driven snow Jews, and how they got what was coming to them. Well, there's no religious celebration, folks, for the destruction of Rome. And what the Romans did to the poor little old Jews pales in comparison to everything else that has done. Okay, 2,000 years of them wandering around without their country, and then, of course, you know, the icing on the cake being, you know, the extermination of trillion of them in the gas chambers in World War II and all of the rest of that. And the Romans have never paid for. There's no yearly religious celebration like there is of Passover and Purim and Hanukkah and all of the others. And that is what the last 100 years has been since, you know, this whole Zionist project began of bringing the Jews back to, you know, the promised land, the land that they say was promised to them. And it's not just that, folks. It's not just bringing them back, because there has to be an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And so they are in the process of destroying what is today the Roman Empire, and that is, of course, the Western world, Europe and America, but especially America, because we are, you know, in terms of our power, we are the nominal, the logical head of the Roman Empire. And so I think that what we are going to see take place is that when Trump does take office again, the country is just going to be so overwhelmed with the rioting and the instability. And I think, folks, honestly, I think, you know, China does play a big part in this. And we discussed this years ago on the program as well, that there would come the day when eventually the Jews would abandon America and the West, and they would go find a new dog to jump on the back of and begin sucking its blood, like the parasites and the ticks that they are, and that it would probably be China or India or both, or both. And so I, you know, as soon as the coronavirus thing hit, and lo and behold, you know, it's coming out of China, and we know that the Chinese do not like Donald Trump because of what he is trying to do in recalibrating American trade with China, and especially our industry and all of the rest of that. And so, just as on 9/11, we had a bunch of Muslims who were blamed for flying these planes into these buildings, when in actuality it was an Israeli operation aimed at starting, kicking off the clash of civilizations. By the same token, we, with the coronavirus, it was the Chinese. You know, my own personal gut tells me that there are several viruses out there, folks. I think that COVID-19 is just one of several. And I think that and I commented on this at the time, that, you know, the numbers of people getting sick and dying from it just did not match up with the hype. And, you know, I warned at that time, I said, I think what they want to do is that they want Trump to downplay the seriousness of it, because as it was at that time in the beginning days of this, you know, it didn't even begin to rival the number of people who die from the flu every year. But what if there are different variations of this coronavirus, each one worse than the previous? Okay. Then what we have is we have the president on record downplaying it and saying, you know, it's not that bad. It's just going to be a cold, whatever. And now they have a new issue, a new anchor to hang around his neck when they try to toss him into, you know, these politically turbulent waters. And I think that my own personal prediction is that the aftermath, the upheaval and the instability that is coming as a result of how this election is going to be settled, and I think at this point I'm still saying that they're going to allow Trump to have it, because him getting into the White House is going to make that instability and that upheaval all the worse. You see, you're not going to get necessarily a bunch of suburbanite, middle-class white people to go out into the streets and to burn the cities down because Trump didn't get elected. But if Biden doesn't get elected, and you can see, you know, that the narrative right now, they're getting everybody to just accept the notion that Biden is the president. They call him president-elect, even though there has been no presidential election that has taken place. It doesn't take place until the middle of December, when the Electoral College meets to choose. But if Biden doesn't win, then you will see the cities going up in flames. And with a president who will be completely bogged down and occupied with dealing with that, because he's not gonna allow it to go the way that it did these last 6 months, folks. Okay, he will call out the army. That was one of the main reasons why he got rid of Esper as Secretary of Defense, because Esper was opposed to the use of army troops in order to quell an insurrection. Trump's not going to do that if he's in there for his second term. And while our military resources are being utilized here at home, then that's when things are, it's going to hit the fan overseas, and especially, in my opinion, in the Far East, China. Because what we must understand is that the Chinese feel about the Far East the same way that the Jews feel about the Middle East. They believe that it's all theirs, everything. You know, it's not the Pacific Ocean, it's the China Ocean. And everybody there who, you know, bears, you know, Oriental features, they are in the Chinese way of thinking about things, they are subject to the Chinese. And so I think, and especially now after reading an article that just appeared yesterday, an interview involving Henry Kissinger, where he was talking about that the situation between America and China could explode in a military confrontation that would, I can't figure out exactly why he said World War One. I'll have to think about that a little bit more, because there are lots of other, you know, lots of other comparisons. Just World War II, I mean, in terms of number, it would be a more apt comparison. So I don't know. I have to think about why he chose World War One instead of World War II. But I think that that is what is headed our way. And I think that everything that is transpiring right now, folks, is part of, as I said, that controlled demolition of the entire system. That they're just going to tear America apart piece by piece. This is their plan. And, yeah, folks, so when I talk about, you know, them, and I talk about the deep state, I'm talking about organized Jewish interests who despise America and see us as the great-great-grandchildren of the same Romans who destroyed their country 2,000 years ago and subjected them to, you know, all of the horrors of living amongst the Gentiles. That's what I think is headed our way. Now, I say this because I did receive some emails from a few of you who said, you know, you paint a very bleak picture. And, well, yeah, folks, it is bleak. It's bleak. And we should not have any illusions about the kinds of trials and tribulations that they're not just headed our way, you know, they're right here. They're at the horizon. We're looking at it. And, you know, I wish I could paint a better picture, but, and that, like I said on the last program, you know, I could say I told you so, because this is exactly what we discussed 4 years ago after Trump was elected. You know, I said that the Jews who, you know, they risked so much in that investment known as 9/11. I mean, think about that, folks. Okay, flying planes into buildings of the most powerful country in human history that has no remorse whatsoever about dropping atomic bombs on non-military targets, as we did in Japan. That was a huge risk for them to undertake. And it was iffy as to whether or not they were going to get away with it. You know, that was what Oklahoma City, the bombing in Oklahoma City in 1995, that's what that was about, folks. That was about, you know, jump-starting this war that had begun under the old man Bush, and which languished under Clinton. You know, when he took over, he was more interested in banning guns and in chasing skirts than he was in fighting wars. And in order to jumpstart that war, they blew up that building in Oklahoma City. And Clinton wouldn't play along with it. He went ahead and he allowed it to be blamed on the neo-Nazis and the militia movement and all the rest of that. But where they actually wanted to take it, which was to blame it on Iraq in order to get this thing going again, Clinton wouldn't go there. And no, I'm not singing Clinton's praises, folks. I understand that he is a son of Beelzebub. He's just an incredibly evil individual. I'm just giving you a cold, practical, clinical analysis of the politics that were involved in it at that time. So that's why September 11th had to happen, folks, was in order to jumpstart this thing that had begun under the old man Bush, and which had languished in the 8 years of Bill Clinton, and now that they were going to, you know, pick up again. And, you know, it's anybody who's lived out in the country, you know, like I do, live, you know, and you work a ranch, and, you know, part of the maintenance of the land is that you have to burn things. You have to burn brush and things like that. And, you know, when you have a languishing fire, you know, because the wood is wet, you know, after there's been a couple of weeks of rain or something like that, you've got a big pile of slash that you have to burn. You know, you try to get it lit, and it just won't light, you know. But there is, you know, there's a little flame, but you really need to generate a lot of heat to get this thing going. And so what do? You get yourself a can, you know, an empty coffee can, and you put some gasoline in it. And you throw that on that fire. And it's like a bomb that goes off in front of you, folks. You have to be very careful and very stupid when you do this. I always mix some used motor oil in it in order to so that it's not so explosive. But this was the equivalent of what they did with 9/11. Okay, they threw gasoline on what was the smoldering fire of the Middle East wars that were begun under George H.W. Bush. And it was a big risk, right? Because those five Israeli intelligence officers were arrested that day. And it was, you know, this wasn't something that had only made its way onto, you know, Rents.com and the Republic Broadcasting Network and, you know, some of these other nutty and unreliable websites. This was on the mainstream news, folks. Mainstream news. Fox News did a four-part extended series on Israeli spying in America right after 9/11. So this was a big risk for them. Big risk. And now they are looking at the possibility that they may have to do it again with a president who has decided that we are not going to lose what is left of our country to these wars in the Middle East that he knows by design have been deliberately crafted in order to see the destruction of the United States as part of this preparatory process of creating a new yearly religious celebration. And my personal prediction is that they're going to name it Tisha B'Av, which is the celebration that they have done every year, folks, you know, crying over the destruction of their temple by the Romans. Tisha B'Av, which, by the way, by pure coincidence, we can all be sure, Tisha B'Av in Hebrew means the ninth day of the 11th month. Tisha meaning nine, and Av being the 11th month of the Hebrew calendar. 9/11. And that probably, folks, that probably is where they would have gone with this in the narrative following the terrorist attacks had it not been for the arrest of those five Israeli Jews who were working for Israeli intelligence. If that arrest, if those arrests had not taken place, then you can all we can all rest assured that the preachers in America who are totally in the back pockets and other places of organized Jewish interests, that they would have said that this was a punishment. You know, the fact that it happened on 9/11, it was a punishment for our great, 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 great Roman ancestors and what they did. And, you know, I do want to read something here. There is a piece appearing on the website, folks. I have it glued to the top. And it's one half of this book that I have been writing now for the last month. And it is, it's entitled Crystal Clear. Oh, gosh, hold on. Crystal Clear. I should know the title of my own book. Crystal Clear, Neocon Incorporated's Seek and Destroy Mission Against Donald J. Trump and His Plans for a 9/11 U-Turn. Well, I released the first half of it, which detailed how every president, beginning with Nixon, who pushed back against organized Jewish interests and tried to impose some type of resolution to this situation in the Middle East before it blew up into World War III, how they paid a price for it. And so the first section, we dealt with Nixon, then we dealt with Ford, and then we moved on to Carter, and then we went on to Reagan. And I had just, you know, I've been doing the research and writing the second half of this, dealing with George H.W. Bush. Now, I'm only going to throw this out there for all of you to think about until we get together again. You know, it's just considered a part of our catechism, okay, that American presidents, oh, they all bow down to the Jews. They always cave into the Jews. They were put in office by the Jews, and they spend the entirety of however long their administration is giving the Jews every damn thing that they want. Well, there is a certain degree of truth to that, folks, but there has also been quite a bit of pushback by American presidents in trying to come to some type of resolution to the Middle East situation. And it's a very complicated thing. And we did touch on this on previous programs, you know, years ago, in explaining, you know, exactly why the Jewish state was created. And everybody says, oh, it's because the British government was, you know, the Rothschild family and, you know, Balfour, the Balfour Declaration and all the rest of it. Well, yes, that is true. That is true. There's no question about the fact that the very wealthy and powerful Rothschild family in England, that they had a lot to do through the use of money, bribery and blackmail and all of the rest of that, had a lot to do with the British and their role in breathing, you know, new life into this Frankenstein child that had been destroyed 2,000 years ago by the Romans. But it's not as simple as just that, folks. The Europeans have wanted the Jews out from their midst for a long, long time. All we have to do is go back through history and look at all of the expulsions that have taken place. Over 100 countries in the last 2,000 years, 100 European countries have expelled them. Okay, and so with the upheaval in Europe, with the arrival of communism and Karl Marx's, you know, his revolutionary, this revolutionary virus that he loosed, and the fact that most of the troublemakers who were behind all of this upheaval in Europe that threatened to just completely destroy what was, you know, thousands of years of European culture and tradition, they didn't have to twist anybody's arm in order to get this thing, you know, dug up from out of its grave, meaning the Jewish state. They didn't have to twist anybody's arm. And this explains in a very powerful way why there has been this quote-unquote support for the Jewish state among Western countries, because they don't want that element of Jewry in their countries. Okay, I compared it years ago, just like the garbage dump that every city in the world, you know, they always have a garbage dump that's way, way, way outside of town where they take the city's garbage and either bury it or burn it or whatever. And with good reason. You know, you want it way, way far away so you don't have to look at it and you don't have to smell it. And that way of thinking, I think, governed and still does to this day a lot of the foreign policy posture that exists within Western countries. They don't want those inbred, insane, cross-eyed, buck-toothed, drooling religious nutcases as they exist in Israel. They don't want them in Christian European society. It's as simple as that. And the reason that I bring this up is that in order to better understand exactly what, at least in terms of the United States, what has been our standing foreign policy with regards to Israel in the Middle East, and especially with Donald Trump, yes, they're going to sing the praises of Israel. Yes, they're going to take the Jews' money in order to get reelected. Yes, they're going to do all of these things, but at the end of the day, there still is this, there's this line. And there have been many administrations who, you know, drew that line in the sand and said, look, this is what we're going to do. We are going to come to some resolution of this problem before it literally does blow up into Armageddon. Okay? And they all paid the price for it. Now, as I said, I've been doing the research and the writing, and just am finishing up now the section dealing with George H.W. Bush. And I just want to put a little, you know, put a little thing out there for all of you to mentally chew on until the next time we get together. George H.W. Bush, the old man, within the first 4 months of his presidency, AIPAC, that's the America-Israel Public Affairs Committee, they hold their yearly shindig where they get together and invite all these powerful, important people so they can all get together and talk about how wonderful the Jews are and how wonderful Israel is and how America is going to stand by Israel. And George Bush sends his Secretary of State, James Baker, to speak at AIPAC. And rather than give the typical fawning, you know, worshipful, you know, speech, he says, now is the time to lay aside once and for all the unrealistic vision of a greater Israel. Israel's interests in the West Bank and Gaza, security and otherwise, can be accommodated in a settlement based upon UN Resolution 242. We therefore call upon Israel to forswear annexation, stop settlement activity, allow schools to reopen, and to reach out to the Palestinians as neighbors who deserve political rights. Now, right there, folks, when I read this, the top of my bald head almost just, you know, blew off when I saw this. I said, oh my God, how do we not know about this? I mean, look, he's right there, Baker, who is in this capacity. He is speaking for the president. And he's saying, now is the time to lay aside once and for all the unrealistic vision of greater Israel. Now, for those of you out there, folks, who do not know what that term greater Israel means, what that means is that Jewish state, as specifically described in many, many verses throughout the Old Testament, between the Nile and the Euphrates rivers. Now, it is highly unlikely, folks, that Baker, James Baker, Bush, George H.W. Bush's Secretary of State, you know, that he was the first official, you know, operating at that level to understand what the real plan here is with regards to what it is that organized Jewry intends to create, okay? That it was never intended to just be this little slice of land along the eastern shores of the Mediterranean, but rather this sprawling theocratic empire between the Nile and the Euphrates, okay? Right there, folks, that's a recipe for Armageddon. When you've got 300 million Arabs and you've got 1.5 billion Muslims around the world who have deep religious and cultural attachments to certain places in the Middle East, including Jerusalem. Now, I bring this up because, you know, up until this point, many of us were of the opinion, well, George H.W. Bush, look what he gave the Jews. He gave them the Gulf War. He gave them, you know, the destruction of Iraq and all the rest of it. Well, yes, that's true, folks. But, you know, we have to plug other variables into this if we're going to come to the right, you know, in putting the pieces of the puzzle together in order to come to have it put this picture in front of us that makes sense. If that was the case, if Bush truly were their boy, as certainly his acquiescence to going to war against Iraq would have suggested, then why would his Secretary of State come out and say something as obviously, I mean, not just controversial, this is blasphemous, this is heretical. And my reason for bringing this up, folks, is that this is the level of study that we're going to be doing on this program here. And so, you know, it's going to challenge a lot of the things that we held to be inviolable, right? There's a much bigger picture involved in all of this than simply one where, you know, and Mike Piper used to say this all the time. He'd say, we don't want to get into the frame of mind in thinking that every little thing that happens only does so because it has met with the approval of the Jews. Now, as Mike said, they are very powerful. They have a lot of influence. That's true. But they don't control everything. And the obvious proof of that is that the world would be a much different place right now if they did. Now, there's one more little section here that I wanted to have all of you chew on mentally until we got back together again. And it was this section dealing with George H.W. Bush, because like I said, I'm just wrapping up the chapter right now dealing with him and what the organized Jewish interest did to him as a result of him pushing for, you know, a resolution to this situation in the Middle East, because he understood, as Donald Trump does, that if this situation is not brought to some type of workable resolution, that it is going to erupt in Armageddon. There was a section here where, what's his name? Viktor Ostrovsky, the former Mossad agent. He's writing about the planned assassination of George H.W. Bush at this Madrid peace conference that he and Baker had organized, and which he forced Israel to be part of. And the way he did it is that he strong-armed them by withholding $10 billion in American cash that they were counting on in order to absorb, I think it was 1 million Jewish, from the USSR, 1 million Jews from USSR that Israel wanted to absorb. And so he held up $10 billion that had been earmarked for them until they came to grips with, until they played ball the way that he wanted to. And by the way, folks, you know, just as an interesting point, which you will read in the upcoming second part to this, the day that George Bush made that announcement that he was going to hold up the $10 billion, guess what the date was? September the 11th, 1991, 10 years exactly, 10 years to the day that Israel and organized Jewish interests decided to pay him back with 9/11. Anyway, listen to this. Upon making that decision, meaning to hold up the $10 billion, the president was instantly placed on the blacklist of every Jewish organization in the United States and regarded as the greatest enemy of the state of Israel. In Israel, posters depicting the president with Pharaoh's headgear and the inscription, "We have overcome the Pharaohs and we will overcome Bush," were plastered across the country. Israeli messengers in all the communities across the United States immediately went into high gear, launching attacks against the president. They fed the media an endless stream of criticism. Now, here we have this former Mossad agent, Viktor Strofsky, talking about what Israel was doing behind the scenes in order to destroy Bush on a political level here in the United States. Now, how then do we reconcile what we see here now as a fait accompli, as Viktor Strofsky is describing it? How do we now explain away all of the constant stream of criticism appearing in the American press, and we know who owns the American press, against Donald J. Trump? Now, folks, I'm doing this because, of course, as I have pointed out, we have this contingent of idiots. Is that right, a contingent? Okay. We have a group of idiots claiming to be geopolitical analysts and specialists on the Middle East and Jewish influence over the American political system, who swear up and down with the same assertiveness that somebody would say that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, that there has been no stream of criticism against Donald J. Trump within the American media. Oh, there have been a few people here and there, but nothing along the lines that would lead us to conclude that that the Jews view Donald Trump as a threat. I even had a conversation a few weeks ago, folks, with a good friend of mine who I used to do a radio program with every week on RBN, who hates Trump because of his Middle East policy. And he stated flat out, he said, no, the media loves him. The media loves him. The Jewish mainstream media loves Trump. And I said, well, what about all of these articles that appear every day and all this coverage? What about that? Oh, there's not that many, he says. A few here and there, but you know, most of the media. And I'm thinking, have I just stepped into like an alternative an alternate reality here? I mean, this is, but yeah, folks, there are people like this. And the funny thing is, these very same people who for the last 4 years have claimed with that same dogmatic rigidity and certainty that the Jews love Trump now are saying that the Jews are trying to steal the election away from Trump. Okay, why would they have to do that? Why would they have to steal the election if they totally controlled everything and if Trump was their boy? Why would they want to get rid of him if he has been the favored son of Judea now for the last 4 years? Now, I don't expect an answer, folks, because you know, these people just are highly, highly irrational. You know, that's one of the things I was planning on starting the program off today. And I think actually what I'm going to do, folks, is I'm going to end the program on this. And it's a little riddle. And the riddle is like this. What is the most dangerous car in the world? Now, people listening to that will say, oh, well, it's probably like a Ferrari, you know, because it's so fast. Or maybe it's a Porsche, you know, because they're so fast. And when you get behind, you know, the wheel of one of these cars that's really fast, that just you want to just mash that pedal down to the floor and take off, you know, 100, 200 miles an hour. No, folks. Actually, those cars are not within the context of this little discussion here, they're not the most dangerous cars in the world. The most dangerous car in the world is a car that won't go any faster than like 20 or 25 miles an hour. But it has no brakes and it has no steering wheel, which means that once you get in there and you put it in gear and you start going, that car is going to go where it wants to go, and there's nothing you can do about it. You're not going to be able to stop it, and you're not going to be able to steer it in whatever direction you needed to go to keep it on the road instead of, you know, going over a cliff or, you know, plowing into a tree or something like that. Well, that is how I would describe a lot of these people, folks, that we have listened to now for years, you know, and all of their expertise. They don't know when to hit the brakes on their conspiracy theories. Okay, this is why this is why our enemies knew exactly how to push our buttons and to whet our conspiracy theory appetite with the nonsense involving Sandy Hook and how it never happened. Nobody died, there was no shooting, and all of the rest of that. And that's what we have in our midst, folks. We have people who simply don't know when to hit the gas and when to hit the brakes when it comes to the conspiracy theories that they believe. They believe everything, as long as it doesn't conform to the mainstream, they believe it, no matter how crazy it is. And we can see now the enormous damage that it has done, because to some degree, there's some number somewhere. I don't know what that number is. I don't know how big it is. I don't know how small it is. But to some degree, our own people, quote unquote, within the quote unquote truth movement, they have contributed to this problem that we are all facing now, these very, very serious problems. Because we're watching the United States being ripped to pieces, and it is happening because of the person of Donald J. Trump. Now, I said four years ago that I wasn't going to get my hopes up about President Trump. And not because of any necessarily personal animus that I had against him, but rather because, the therapy that he was planning to do in rehabilitating America was just, I felt that it was a day late and a dollar short, that the forces of evil that were arrayed against us were just too far along, the cancer was too far advanced, and even with the most radical surgery and chemotherapy and radiation therapy and all of the rest of that, that, you know, that we might be able to buy some time, but we certainly were not going to get through this thing, you know, in any way that where we weren't going to be going through the kinds of upheavals that we're going through now. And I think that has obviously borne itself out and proven itself to be the case, folks. I mean, the country is being ripped apart piece by piece. And as I said on last week's program, they're just getting warmed up. So anyway, we're going to call it a day with today's program, folks, because I've got to get out there and I've got to work on replacing a CV axle on the family truckster. It's a 25-year-old Volvo station wagon, and I got to get that thing fixed before it starts raining. And I just got to do it. Got to do it. So anyway, as I said, folks, those of you who have inquired about helping out with the costs associated with doing this, especially now when everybody is definitely feeling the pinch, we can use the help, and I genuinely appreciate it, because we will be coming up next month for renewal on the website, and I would like to increase the bandwidth on this so that I can get more people listening to the program. So anybody who is interested in contributing, just send me an email, please, and that email is The Ugly Truth Radio Program, that's all one word, the Ugly Truth Radio Program at gmail.com, and I will send you a link. I would put it on the front of the website, folks, but I know that if I do, that it will get, they'll do what they've done with all of my other online payment things where, you know, they shut it down, they grab all the money, and then they go on vacation with it. So anyway, just send me an email, and I will send you the link, and thanking you ahead of time for that. Anyway, folks, until we meet again, God willing, take care of yourselves, take care of your loved ones. Buckle up and hunker down and batten the hatches, folks, because we are in for some very, very rough weather. I don't, you know, discount the possibility of miracles. I know my entire life, at least since having gotten married and become a father, has been a miracle, but in this case, I think that we are in for some very difficult times, and but that's okay, folks. That's how we're going to. That's how this cancer, the cancer of Judaism that you heard at the very beginning of this program, when you had that insane Hebrew talking about how they are this corrosive force. This is part of the process. I think the historical process of humanity, of Gentile civilization, finally coming to rational grips with the fact that this is a cancer. It's a cancer. There's no such thing as having this in your system and being healthy. You have to just get it out. As Jesus himself said, if your right hand is a source of evil, cut it off. If your right eye is a source of evil, gouge it out, because it's better for you to enter heaven maimed or half blind than to be tossed body and soul into perdition. And that is exactly what has happened to the world, folks, as a result of us taking this tolerant and this, you know, permissive, you know, attitude towards the religion of the Jews, because there is nothing good about it, nothing good. We have to just get it out of our system. So anyway, folks, until we meet again, take care of yourselves, take care of your loved ones, batten down the hatches, and we'll see you next time.